Mediterranean Sea in safe conditions should be respected. That is why I inform you that tomorrow a maritime action ship will set sail from Cartagena, equipped with all the essential resources in case it becomes necessary to assist the flotilla or carry out a rescue.
Sanchez said Spain and 14 other countries have informed Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu that their citizens on board the flotilla are under political and diplomatic protection. He added that if the flotilla encounters difficulties, those on board could be rescued by the Spanish naval vessel. Spain's move came after Italy announced it was sending a navy vessel to provide full assistance to the flotilla. Italy's decision represented the first direct intervention by European governments to protect humanitarian ships attempting to break Israel's blockade of Gaza. It followed overnight drone attacks on the aid-carrying vessels off the coast of Greece. The Global Samut flotilla is using about 50 civilian boats with citizens from 45 countries on board. An Italian lawmaker has raised a question in Parliament asking the Italian government for explanations over media allegations that hundreds of Italians have joined Israeli forces in the ongoing genocide in Gaza. This as a lower house session was suspended on Wednesday following an Israeli attack on the Gaza-bound Global Samut flotilla in international waters. Max Civili has details from Rome.
Italy's opposition five-star movement lawmaker Stefania Ascari has submitted a parliamentary question to Foreign Minister Antonio Tajani and Interior Minister Matteo Piantedosi, requesting explanations over some media reports alleging that about 1,000 Italian citizens, including those with dual Israeli passports, have joined Israel's occupation forces after October 7, 2023, and have participated in the ongoing genocide in the Gaza Strip. Lawmaker Ascari said on Wednesday that the Italian government has a duty to ensure respect for international humanitarian law and the principles enshrined in the UN Genocide Convention.
The allegations are extremely serious. There could even be more than 1,000 Italian citizens involved. We demand to know the extent of Italy's complicity with terrorist Israel and its genocide in Gaza. We demand answers.
This is how Israel cares about Italian soldiers. About a year ago, Israeli forces started targeting UNIFIL positions in southern Lebanon with three attacks on Italian bases. Italy's defense minister Guido Crosetto called the attack a war crime and summoned the Israeli ambassador to Rome to lodge a formal complaint. Two Italian soldiers were injured in that attack.
Terrorist Israel is in constant breach of international norms. The Israelis think that they are above the law. They are wrong. They have bombarded embassies, sovereign countries. They have attacked Iran, Qatar in the middle of the negotiations. And now several vessels were targeted by Israeli drones off the coast of Greece.
On Wednesday, a session of the Italian lower house was suspended after a group of opposition lawmakers, including Stefania Ascari, occupied the government benches demanding that a member of the executive report on the attack on the Global Samut flotilla in international waters overnight. The Global Samut flotilla, comprising around 50 civilian boats attempting to break Israel's naval blockade of Gaza and deliver humanitarian aid, came under attack in the early hours of Wednesday when, according to organizers, drones dropped explosive devices near several boats, causing no injuries.
Loro pietiscono.
Our ministers beg Israel when they should demand security measures for the Italian citizens on board the flotilla. Israel's assault on the flotilla happened in international waters, and it's an act of piracy. It's a crime. In a motion presented some time ago, we said Netanyahu must be stopped, sanctions must be imposed on Israel, and all accords with Tel Aviv must be suspended.
In the aftermath of the attack on the flotilla, the Italian government deployed a multi-purpose frigate to head towards the flotilla for possible rescue operations, focusing primarily on Italian citizens. Max Civili, Rome.
The Spanish government has taken a decisive step against Israel, approving a complete arms embargo and further restrictions on trade linked to illegal settlements. The move comes after weeks of international pressure and is being presented as part of Spain's commitment to peace and international law.
Spain has approved urgent measures against the ongoing genocide in Gaza, standing firmly for human rights and international law. Economy Minister Carlos Cuerpo highlighted the human toll, over 65,000 killed, 165,000 wounded, and 2 million displaced. Thousands of children face malnutrition. Madrid pledges to lead international pressure on Israel, demanding accountability and pushing for a just and lasting peace.
Spain's new decree, awaiting approval by the Congress of Deputies, enforces a total arms embargo on Israel, prohibiting all defense exports and imports, as well as dual-use products and technology. It also denies transit of aircraft fuels with potential military use and bans imports from illegal Israeli settlements in the occupied Palestinian territories. Advertising of such goods and services is also forbidden, and existing or pending authorizations are revoked.
The minister called on Spain to continue leading international efforts to confront the crisis in Gaza and to ramp up pressure on the Israeli regime. As announced by the Prime Minister and highlighted at this week's UN General Assembly in New York, Madrid aims to hold Israel accountable for its ongoing attacks on Palestinian civilians.
No es el final del camino.
I want to make two proposals. First, the state of Palestine must become a full member of the United Nations, and its integration should be completed as soon as possible. Second, we must take immediate action to halt the brutality and make peace possible. Spain will implement a plan to stop the genocide in Gaza, and will continue taking courageous measures with any who wish to join. History will judge us, and its verdict will be harsh on those who committed this atrocity, and those who remained silent.
The Spanish government has become one of Europe's most outspoken critics of the Israeli regime, leading initiatives that openly reject and condemn its genocidal policies in Gaza, as well as the ongoing expansion of Israeli settlements in the West Bank.
Thanks to popular pressure, Spain has approved a total arms embargo on Israel. We will not allow companies or military supplies that fuel the Palestinian genocide to enter our ports or airports. We will remain firm and strengthen the law to close any loopholes.
Spain is now the first EU country to impose a full arms embargo on Israel, a move officials call both symbolic and practical. It highlights Madrid's push for human rights and peace, while raising the question of whether other European nations will follow its lead. Alberto García, Málaga.
Mahdi Esfandiari, an Iranian academic, has now been detained in France for 7 months amid growing calls for her release. As diplomatic efforts continue for her release, activists and Esfandiari's family highlight the broader issues of free speech and political motivations behind her continued imprisonment.
Today marks the 210th day since the illegal detention of Iranian academic Mahdi Esfandiari in France. She was living in Lyon when she was arrested by French security officers after a surprise raid at her home on February 28th. Her family described it as a case of kidnapping or hostage-taking, saying the officers arrived unannounced, bundled her into a van, and held her without charge. French authorities refused for an entire month to provide detailed information to the Iranian Foreign Ministry, which intervened at the family's request. For more than 50 days, she was denied any phone access, kept in solitary confinement, and prevented from contacting her family or friends. This continued until mid-April. According to Mahdia's communication with her family, her interrogation inside French police custody quickly turned into a systematic psychological torment. They also stripped her of her hijab. The young woman is accused of advocating terrorism for having participated in a Telegram channel denouncing the ongoing genocide in Gaza. To justify her continued detention, some investigators claimed that she was acting under Iran's influence and that this was a case of interference, accusations her lawyer has denounced as unfounded and purely political. Iranian authorities have repeatedly called for her release, describing her detention as unjust and politically motivated. Since her imprisonment, two requests for conditional release have been rejected, first by the Paris court in June and then by the Court of Appeal in July. Activists, Neighbors and supporters of Esfandiari are denouncing what they see as a serious violation of freedom of speech. They say her case lays bare the blatant violation of human rights and the complete absence of genuine freedom of expression in the West, including in France. Esfandiari's imprisonment is now gaining increased attention as calls grow for her immediate release.
Iranian Foreign Minister Seyed Abbas-Araghchi has met with his French counterpart Jean-Noël Barrot on the sidelines of the UN General Assembly in New York as part of ongoing diplomatic consultations. The talks revolved around initiatives to prevent the reimposition of previously lifted UN Security Council resolutions. Earlier on Wednesday, Iranian President Masoud Pezeshkian also held a meeting with French President Emmanuel Macron. They discussed bilateral relations and expressed optimism that addressing current challenges could pave the way for more cooperation in the near future. On the nuclear issue, President Pezeshkian reiterated that Iran is not pursuing nuclear weapons. He underscored Tehran's readiness to engage with European partners within a mutually acceptable framework to promote dialogue on its peaceful nuclear program. At the UN General Assembly, Iran's President Masoud Pezeshkian made his speech with a sharp condemnation of Israel.
Our world in this way, let's take a look at the world in the past 2 years. We've been witness to a genocide in Gaza. We've been witnessing the destruction of homes and repeated violations of sovereignty and territorial integrity in Lebanon. We have seen destruction of infrastructure in Syria, attack against the Yemeni people. We've been witness to starvation of little kids, and also aggression against the sovereignty of other nations, and aiming the leaders of countries. And all this has been actually by the support of the most armed regime in the world, and that's under the excuse of self-defense. Do you prefer this for your own self? Who is destabilizing the region and the world? And who is a threat against global peace and security? Who is violating the golden rule of human morals? Your Excellencies, ladies and gentlemen, all of you have been witness that a few months ago my country came under violation in contravention of international law. Airstrikes of the Zionist regime and also those of the United States against cities, homes, and infrastructure in Iran.
President Pezeshkian saved his strongest criticism for Israel and its allies, saying they try to impose their will. He called Israeli Prime Minister Netanyahu a criminal and labeled U.S.-Israeli war on Iran as a grave betrayal of diplomacy. Pezeshkian also warned that the U.S.-Israeli genocide in Gaza would affect all countries if it continues. On the issue of Iran's nuclear program, Pezeshkian stated that the country does not seek a nuclear bomb, citing a religious fatwa as proof. The Iranian president also met with his French counterpart on the sidelines of the UN General Assembly. Pezeshkian and Macron discussed Iran-IAEA ties and the activation of the 2015 nuclear deal's snapback mechanism. The White House has instructed federal agencies to prepare for extensive job losses in the event of a government shutdown, as the Trump administration is seeking to shrink the size of the federal workforce. The budget office directed agencies to identify programs lacking discretionary funding if Congress fails to enact a budget by the September 30th deadline. The guidance mandate said agencies submit their proposed reduction in force plans. A senior Democratic official condemned the instruction, characterizing it as an intimidation tactic. Democrats and Republicans are locked in a standoff as government funding is on the brink of expiring. Since assuming office in January, President Trump has initiated efforts to reduce the federal workforce. Denmark has rather closed a major airport in the north amid heightened security concerns following drone incidents. Eyewitnesses reported observing green blinking lights hovering over the Aalborg airport late Wednesday. The closure has impacted military operations as Aalborg serves as a base for Denmark's armed forces. The airport closure occurred just 2 days after a similar incident in Copenhagen, triggered by sightings of drones in its airspace. Denmark has labeled the recent drone disruptions as the most serious attack on its critical infrastructure. The situation reflects security concerns in the region, with Estonia, Poland, and Romania accusing Russia of violating their airspace with drones and fighter jets. Russia has denied these claims. Moscow says its aircraft remained in neutral airspace and complied with international aviation rules. And that brings us to an end here on this edition of World News. Stay tuned, though. Bye.
today's special.
Assalamu alaikum.
It's special for you. We present to you today. Bismillahir Rahmanir Rahim. In the name of Allah, we start this episode of today's special by the name of Allah Almighty. And then we say salam to all of you, dear brother and sister, dear listener of this episode of today's special from IRIB English Radio. So welcome and wait. We're going to speak about etiquette of lending money. You're listening to this program on Thursday, 2nd of Rabiul Thani, 1447 of the Islamic Lunar Hijri calendar, corresponding to the 3rd of May, 1404 of the solar calendar, and the 25th of September, 2025 of the Christian Gregorian calendar. Let's open Allah's book and we bless this moment by listening to verses 244 to 245. Of chapter Al-Baqarah. We come back to the studio, we speak about the important points of these verses.
A'udhu billahi minash shaytanir rajim. Wa qatilu fi sabilillahi wa'lamu anna Allaha sami'un 'alim.
And fight in the cause of Allah and know that Allah is hearing and knowing.
من ذا الذي يقرض الله قرضا حسنا فيضاعفه له أضعافا كثيرة والله يقبض ويبسط وإليه ترجعون.
Who is it that would loan Allah a goodly loan so he may multiply it for him many times over? And it is Allah who withholds and grants abundance, and to him you will be returned.
La ilaha illallah, la ilaha illallah.
Bless your day with contemplation on the verses of the Holy Quran.
In several verses of the Quran, donating in the path of Allah has been rendered into giving a loan to Allah. It shows the ultimate grace of Allah unto His servants on one hand and the utmost importance of the subject of donation on the other hand. In Nahjul Balagha, Imam Amir al-Mu'mineen, Ali ibn Abi Talib says, Allah asks you for a loan while the treasures of heavens and the earth belong to Him and He's self-sufficient, praiseworthy. It is not because of His want, but that He may try you for which of you is the best in action. In this episode of today's special, we're going to speak about the etiquette of lending money. In Islam, the essence of a debt and credit is rooted in trust and honesty. Rather than threats or intimidation, debt collection follows clear principles, emphasizing patience by allowing a grace period and the borrower's ability to repay into consideration. The fundamental principle of debt and credit requires a valid contract and mutual consent between the lender and borrower. Beyond the financial responsibility, this contract also carries a significant moral obligation. Islam sets guidelines for these contracts to promote openness and honesty between both parties. In Islam, debt and credit agreements must avoid any element of usury and should be grounded in the intention to help and provide relief.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. In the name of Allah, the most compassionate, the most merciful, may Allah's peace and blessings be upon the Holy Prophet of Islam. Dear brothers and sisters, assalamu alaikum and welcome to today's special. This is Ali, your host. We shall be talking about the etiquettes of lending and borrowing in Islam. The fourth etiquette with regard to lending from Islamic perspective is documenting the amount and terms of the loan. An important principle in lending is to record the amount and its terms. This, besides preventing potential disputes, brings transparency to financial relationships. Almighty Allah says in verse 282 of Surah Al-Baqarah, يَا أَيُّهَا الَّذِينَ آمَنُوا إِذَا تَدَايَنْتُمْ بِدَيْنٍ إِلَىٰ أَجَلٍ مُسَمَّى فَاكْتُبُوهُ. O you who believe, when you contract a debt for a specified term, write it down. This divine recommendation shows the importance of documenting debts and preventing future problems and disputes. Recording the loan can be through a formal document or even a simple written agreement between the two parties. The sixth etiquette of lending in Islam is avoiding taking interest or riba. One of the fundamental principles of Qarz al-Hasana in Islam is avoiding taking any kind of interest or increase over the principal loan amount. Any condition that lead to paying an amount more than the loan is considered usury or riba and is forbidden. As stated in a narration from Imam Kadhim alayhi salam regarding a man who lent 100 dirhams to another on the occasion that he gives him 5 dirhams or less or more. He said this act is pure riba.
Special topics for a special program. You can listen today, now and here, IRIB English Radio.
May this moment last forever.
Today's special.
This feeling of love, just let it grow forever through your life. Bring beautiful years of joy between you till the end of time.
If you deny someone a loan, be careful of co-signing loans. This is one step to take before you lend money. Private lending situations, such as loans between family members or friends, can also involve co-signers. However, be very careful before you agree to co-sign a loan for someone. When you are a co-signer, you have to allocate time and effort. When you are a co-signer, you should track a borrower's payments to better protect yourself. You can ask to see proof of the borrower's bank account transfer or proof of payment to ensure they are making the loan payments on time. The other way is you are liable for the full amount and can be sued. As a co-signer, you agree to be held responsible if the borrower can't pay back a loan. Therefore, the lender can sue you first if the borrower defaults on payments.
Mm-hmm.
This is today's special, and this is the Islamic perspective on debt. It is encouraged to give respite or deferment to the debtor if he is unable to pay on time. Prophet Muhammad, peace be upon him, and his family said, "Whoever gives respite to one in difficulty, he will have the reward of an act of charity for each day. Whoever gives him respite after payment becomes due will have the reward of an act of charity equal to the amount of loan for each day. Moreover, it is permissible to reduce the amount of debt or waive it altogether as a gesture of generosity and goodwill." The Prophet, peace be upon him, and his pure progeny said, "If anyone remits anything from a debt owed to him, he will have the amount recorded for him as a charity."
We only have one problem in the whole world, and that's ignorance. They're living in ignorance. They don't know that what they're doing is going to keep them where they are. And they keep doing it because they don't know how to change. They're overwhelmed with the debt. People are saying, "I need the money." They haven't got it. They want to take their family on a vacation. They don't have the money to go. So they may borrow it and go anyway. Now they got more debt. They have to understand that they don't have to live that way. Mm. I wrote a book called You're Born Rich. The truth is you are. Most people are just a little short of money. Mm-hmm. But you are born rich, rich in potential. And then you focus on prosperity. You've got to have a financial goal. You've got to work toward it. And you've got to understand that you can earn more than you're earning. And wealthy people don't have one source of income. They have more than one. I was earning money all last night while I was sleeping. Yep. You can actually earn more money when you're sleeping than you can spend when you're awake.
Yeah.
You know, it sounds like a cute line, but it's true. There's no end to what we can earn. If you are not getting information from someone who is already wealthy, then you're probably getting information from the wrong people. Most people ask their brother-in-law, or the guy next door, or the girl they know, "How do I earn more?" Hell, if they knew, they'd be earning it. They don't know. And most people talk to people that don't know. Carlyle put it very well. He said he did not believe in the collective wisdom of individual ignorance. Mm. And that's where most people are getting it from, people that don't know any more than themselves.
Thank you, dear brother and sister, for listening to this episode of today's special, in which we spoke about the etiquette of lending money. Shall we follow this topic? Till the next time, fi amanillah.
Told me that I'm crazy, who you're praying for. They told me there is nothing, who you're looking for. Stop doing what you're doing, cause there is no hope. Just come with me, I'll show you what's behind your door. And they showed me all kind of lies. My eyes were locked, yes I was mesmerized. But deep inside I know that there's a better world. Cause I'm a believer. I'm a believer.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. Radio.
activists who do not just challenge systems, they confront them head on. They blur the lines between protest and provocation, pushing public discourse into uncomfortable but necessary territory. Their work is often polarizing, but it's rooted in a deep conviction to dismantle injustice. My guest today is one such activist. Welcome to SOAR. I am Bahman Roy.
Calla Walsh is an American political activist, writer, and organizer known for her outspoken views on U.S. foreign policy, anti-imperialism, and Palestinian solidarity. She is a member of the Democratic Socialists of America and co-chair of the National Network on Cuba. Walsh has contributed to different media outlets and has participated in delegations to Cuba and Syria. In 2023, she was arrested during direct actions targeting Elbit Systems, an Israeli military contractor, as part of a work with Palestine Action US.
Calla Walsh, it's a pleasure to have you on SOAP.
It's a pleasure to be here. Thank you for having me.
Can you describe the goals and tactics of the group? I want more than this. I want to know how much of a success story do you think this is, the Palestine Action US?
I would say we had successes and we had failures, like any organization.
Right.
Ultimately, we had a short lifespan because very quickly we were hit with extreme heavy charges. On November 20th, 2023, I and two other people, and later a fourth person, were arrested for attacking an Elbit factory in the state of New Hampshire. And unlike the office in Cambridge, that was somewhere where, you know, people were doing computer work, whereas this factory that we were arrested at, it was where they were actually producing helicopter parts, bomb parts, screens for aerial vehicles.
Right.
And many of the employees that work there, you know, are former IOF soldiers, former U.S. military soldiers. And in response to that action, the state, you know, hit us with felony charges where we were facing 37 years in prison. So for a while, I, you know, thought I would be in prison for the rest of my life. And unfortunately, we had not built out an infrastructure where we could really continue doing action in the face of all that repression. It disorganized us, and we also became very isolated because the broader movement as a whole, you know, wasn't necessarily embracing these kind of direct action tactics because of how risky they understood them as. But I think the longer that the genocide has escalated and gone on, and the more horrific the war crimes have gotten, the higher the death toll, and just the doubling down of Western governments on their support for Zionism, the more clear it is that just protesting and just marching is insufficient, and that we do have a duty to escalate. And, you know, I think a lot of people have articulated this point better than I have, but you know, if we, Muhammad Al-Kurd, the Palestinian writer, he wrote this amazing article where he says, are we indeed all Palestinians? And he kind of poses this question to the movement in the West where he asks, you know, if we are chanting, we are all Palestinians, which is a refrain that is chanted in marches in the West all the time, or we chant, you know, resistance is justified when people are occupied. What are we doing materially to actualize or materialize that statement? You know, back to what I was saying earlier, like the U.S. Shares the same DNA as Israel. The U.S. was built on genocide and settler colonialism and the annihilation of an indigenous population, and it has gone on for hundreds and hundreds of years.
Yeah.
And so I think Palestine has just like exposed all of these contradictions and shown, you know, our duty to resist Zionism and our duty to resist U.S. imperialism, because the U.S. government is also an occupying force, just like the Zionist entity. So, sorry I got a little bit off topic of your question, but, you know, I think Palestine Action, in every country where it has taken place, you know, they're still active in Italy, in Germany, in other countries, in Europe, in Ireland. They recently broke into where U.S. military planes were in Ireland. That was really inspiring to see. But it's really pushed, you know, the ceiling higher on what we think is possible tactically. Right. Like, solidarity is not just a slogan or an expression. It is a material act. And now that the repression is coming down more, we also need to theorize what comes next and how our tactics need to change now that this kind of organization is being repressed in this way.
Right. Carly was saying that you are facing 70 years in prison.
37.
37 years in prison. What makes you want to go on as an activist?
I think as soon as I, even at a young age, as soon as I became an anti-imperialist and a communist and studied the history of these movements, I understood that that repression, that arrest, that charges, that prison time
right.
are a likelihood for anyone that is posing such a threat to power or attempting to challenge the status quo and these systems. And so I think I maybe always expected that could be my fate and maybe was surprised that it became that so young, but I never let the fact that I was facing prison time or facing these charges to silence me or to stop speaking up for the resistance or for, you know, supporting direct action. And no matter how many of us they arrest or repress, they can never arrest the idea of resistance
right.
and our unity and our steadfastness. And I think the role of political prisoners in the Palestinian movement is so inspiring. Like, they are truly the compass of the Palestinian struggle. And I mean, that is a huge reason why the Al-Aqsa flood was launched, was to
right.
free the prisoners, of course, which, you know, has been successful in many of the prisoner exchanges and the flood of the free. And I think we have a lot to learn from that example in the U.S. and in the West, as there is a growing number of political prisoners who are being locked up for their pro-Palestine activism. I feel really lucky that I ended up doing only 40 days in jail when it could have been a lot worse. And I think it's, like, important for me to use this platform too to shout out the names of people in the U.S. who are locked up
Please,
right now.
Of
like
course.
Casey Goonan is about to be sentenced to federal prison with terrorism enhancement. They are someone who was part of the student intifada and was arrested last year. There is also Elias Rodriguez, of course, who carried out a martyrdom operation assassinating two Zionist diplomats in the heart of the U.S. Capitol. And he is facing the death penalty. And I think those people are really important for us to defend, because to not defend our political prisoners would be suicidal, because we know the state wants to ultimately, you know, repress and come for us all. And so to build a movement that will fight for our prisoners, that will defend them, is the only way that we will win and that we'll overcome the repression.
Right, Carlova, I wanted the conversation to go on, but we have time limits, of course, as always. At the end of every program, our guests usually talk directly to our audience. They become yours for a couple of minutes. So take your time and talk directly to our audience.
Mostly, I really want to say thank you to Iran, to the people of Iran, for welcoming me here, for welcoming me here as someone whose government is, you know, carrying out a genocide against Palestine, against the Iranian people, against the Axis of Resistance. It is an honor to be welcomed here with such kindness and grace. And, you know, as someone living in the United States, I guess I'll quote another great leader, the great martyr Hassan Nasrallah, who always emphasized that it is not Israel that controls the United States. It is the United States that controls Israel. And I think with this latest aggression against Iran, that was incredibly clear that the U.S. is giving the green light for all of these attacks, no matter how much they might appear to keep their hands off. Ultimately, this is a strategy, this genocide, and this broader war that is being carried out. It is a broader strategy of U.S.-led imperialism to maintain its hegemony, which is crumbling in the face of the anti-imperialist resistance and the new world order that is emerging. And so when we fight for Palestine, it is not it cannot be seen as separate from this broader struggle, from the struggle against the sanctions on Cuba and Iran. It cannot be seen as separate from the struggle of Black and indigenous people in the United States who are being oppressed and are being killed by the police. I think learning about the Palestinian struggle is a gateway to learning about the struggles of oppressed people across the world. And we have to, know what we are really up against, which is a global system of imperialism that will only be defeated if we open up fronts against it all across the world. Death by a thousand cuts. And it's been a great honor to be here. It has been really moving just to witness the destruction caused by the attacks. Today, we visited the sites of where civilian homes were destroyed and families were martyred. We visited the cemetery where the martyrs have been buried. But also, so importantly, we saw people rebuilding from the destruction, and we saw just the incredible unity of the Iranian people in the face of these attacks. And I heard a lot of people saying that this war has only made us stronger. And so the last thing I'll say is just we can't afford to be defeatist, and we have to have revolutionary optimism that victory is dear and is possible within our lifetimes.
Carla Walsh, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you so much. It's been a pleasure.
Of course. And thank you for being with us on another soap. Thank you so much, and goodbye until next time.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم السلام عليكم ورحمة الله
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints.
The birthday of Muhammad, peace be upon him and his progeny, marks the greatest celebration in history, 2016. Imam Khamenei. The first thing that the Islamic Republic did was to capture the Zionist center in Tehran, which was in control of the previous regime, and to expel them from the country, and then it gave the center to Palestinians. This was a true and symbolic course of action, and we have been continuing this position till today. We supported Palestine, we helped the Palestinians, and we will continue to do so. We have no considerations on this matter. The entire world of Islam should help Palestine. In the statements of our late Imam, may God bestow paradise on him, and those of the officials of the Islamic Republic, the eradication of the Israeli government has been frequently repeated. However, the enemies distort this issue. The eradication of the Israeli government does not mean the eradication of the Jewish people. We have nothing to do with that. It means the eradication of that government and that imposed regime. Eradication of Israel means that it is the people of Palestine, the true owners of that land, whether Muslims, Christians, or Jews in that land, who should elect the main elements of their government. It means that they should throw out foreigners, thugs and criminals like Netanyahu and other such individuals who are real thugs, and they should run their own country. This is what the eradication of Israel means. And this will happen. Some people think it unlikely, asking how Palestine can become independent after the passage of 70 years. However, in the Balkans and in other countries, they became independent after 60, 70 years, during which time their country had been occupied by others. Their lands were given back to their people. So this is not unlikely. And this is not difficult for Allah the Almighty. The Holy Quran, chapter 14, verse 20, this will happen. We are the supporters of the Palestinians. We are advocates of the independence of Palestine. We are advocates of the salvation of Palestine. And we are not anti-Jewish people. In our own country, there are many Jews who live in complete security. This was another point.
Allah, I want to thank you. I want to thank you for all the things that you've done for me through all my years. I've been lost. You guided me from all the ways that were wrong. Indeed, you gave me hope.
Choose to think better. Welcome to a better you. RIB English Radio.